Welcome to the Sales Acceleration Show, where we talk about the science of selling across the areas of demand generation, sales, and sales operation. This show is about doing. We focus on real problems, real solutions with real people, all dedicated to accelerating sales.
I'm Gabe Larson.
And I'm Steve Ehrer. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the Sales Acceleration Show. We've got an exciting conversation we're going to be
having
today.
It's always exciting.
You got myself, Gabe Larson, and Mr. Stephen Ehrer.
Here.
Is it Steve or Stephen?
Steve, Stephen. Hey, you, get off the couch.
What's your middle name, man?
Charles.
Stephen, is it Stephen Charles?
Ehrer Jr.
I can't believe your last name is Ehrer.
I know.
Did you think about changing it?
Long story. No.
Ehrer.
No.
I was hoping when I first met you it was like Ehrer or something.
No, in fact, if there's a town in Serbia or Croatia called
Ehrer. It's
pretty
important to know which place.
It is. It's in the Lika Valley. It's a Serbian settlement, and there's a town called Ehrer. So to all my Ehrer family, if you meet someone with my last name, E-R-O-R, we're related.
Jeez.
It's a small group.
Nobody cares about that.
Larsons are a dime a dozen.
I'm an S-E-N though, pal.
Oh, ooh.
That's a little different than your S-O-N's.
That's why I spell it when I'm saying your Twitter handle is Gabe Larson, at Gabe Larson, S-E-N.
That is true. I need to do that more. That's caused problems in my life many a time. So today we're going to be listening to founder and CEO. Co-founder and CEO of InsideSales.com, Dave Elkington.
Yeah, this is...
Did a great session on AI, which is really big lately, thanks to a big announcement by Salesforce.com, right?
Well, Salesforce rolled out Einstein, and we've talked a lot about predictive analytics. We've talked about machine learning, but we've always been hesitant to use the words AI, because I think people think about Terminator and the machines taking over and all this stuff. And there's all this baggage with AI. And
so there's multiple terms for it, right? It is machine learning. It's predictive analytics. It's cognitive computing. It's artificial intelligence. So whatever you call it.
Right. But I think it's not the future. It's now.
That's right. And I think Dave really dives into and explains. He talks about three fundamental areas, and we'll certainly let you listen to it and decide for yourself. But to really establish what is AI, setting the record straight, giving people an explanation of how it's being used, how it should be used. So he talks a little bit about the math.
How he talks about how we already use predictive so much in all of our life.
I know. That was cool.
And I don't think people realize how much... they use predictive. In fact, they might have used predictive to find this show. You know, you think about it, iTunes could have suggested this is a show you want to listen to based off
of. Yeah, right. Just like Netflix or Amazon.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, in the B2C world, it is all over the place. And so Dave breaks down and talks about that a little bit. And then he talks about, you know, a little bit that the math isn't quite as big a deal as you think it may be. Would be. I know a lot of people out there, the math and the algorithms and the random forest model and the regression analysis. And I'm trying to think of other words I've heard, but don't know what they mean. So he talks a little bit about that, but then he dives into the data and he talks about it. This is where the meat of it is. There's quality and quantity. And then he ends with kind of an application, you know, how do you actually apply it and start thinking about that? And so, I think it's interesting. I think the audience will enjoy it. And any closing comments, Steve, before we jump in?
I just think it's really fascinating. I love this stuff. It's right now. I'd also say there is and we'll post a link to this. There's also, he wrote a LinkedIn article about this that we should post. This is what's going on now. This isn't some far-flung sci-fi movie. This is going on right now. You're using it. Your phone uses it. Why not use it at work?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, with that, let's go through, you know, make sure you subscribe to us on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes. Email us. Let's hear your thoughts on AI at podcastinsidesales.com. If we have any really insightful or funny ones, we'll go ahead and bring those on. Reach out to Gabe Larson at Gabe Larson. That's S-E-N. And I'm at Steve Ehrer on Twitter. And then find us on LinkedIn, and we'd be happy to talk further and continue the conversation on the interwebs. And with that, let's hear from Dave and let's get at it.
So welcome to the InsideSales.com Sales Revolution event. We believe there's a revolution happening in sales, and we see it all over the place this week. And it's really tied to two key things. Number one, it's tied to the message of artificial intelligence that we're seeing Salesforce run with. We're seeing it all over the place. Number two, there's a fundamental change in the workflow of your sales reps that is encompassing that AI message, and we're gonna share those two topics today. So to understand that, let's actually look at the workflow of your sales rep. Now, most of you think the sales rep starts at what, 8 a.m., maybe 7 a.m., maybe someone roll in about 9 a.m. It actually starts in many cases where they're surrounded in technology in everything they do. So they've got their desktop, they've got their mobile apps, they've got their fitness trackers, they've got their health trackers. They're absolutely encircled with technology. Their day actually starts in many cases at 5 a.m. And at 5 a.m., they get a predictive notification of optimal time to wake up in some cases. They also wake up in a predictively climate-controlled environment from a company like Nest, where Nest is saying, hey, 68 is the perfect temperature for you to wake up and to be motivated and to get going. By 6 a.m., they're out running with their fitness tracker, and it's predictively recommending the optimal route, the optimal exercise to take advantage of that time. By 7 a.m., they're back, they're about to take a shower, and they get a notice on their mobile phone saying, hey, your typical route to work is gonna have a 10 or 20 minute delay, but we've predictively identified an optimal route that's gonna save you 10 minutes, but you need to hurry. On the way to work, they're getting streamed predictively the best music that's gonna actually optimize around the frequency, the cadence, the notes of different songs that are gonna actually motivate them and help them be productive at work. Then they get to work, and interestingly, nothing. But it's okay, because by lunch, they get an email from Amazon notifying them about a product that it predictively is recommending that's gonna really just sing to that sales rep. They buy it, they go to lunch, then they're back to work, and nothing. Now, on their way home from work, the good news is they're taking a predictively optimized route home, they're pushed a notification of their favorite place to eat, and they swing by, there's a new promo, they grab Indian food, because they just love Indian food, they run home and snuggle up to a little bit of Netflix, which is predictively recommending the best movie to watch. Now, it actually isn't a movie. In this case, it's a binge TV series, but they're snuggling up, watching their TV series while eating their curry. So what's missing here? It's interesting. There's almost no predictive at work. Why is that the case? I'll explain. We believe that AI is revolutionizing every aspect of our lives, and it started in our consumer lives. And there's a specific reason for that. We also think, however, that science and data is going to create a revolution in our business life. And as we do it, and what's relevant to us today, is it's creating a revolution that'll help us sell more. The promise of AI is not a theoretical promise. It's a pragmatic promise. And many of you in this room are taking advantage of that today, selling more. So first, let's talk about the companies who have won these consumer battles. And these are massive companies. I mean, you've got companies like Nest and Fitbit and Pandora, but there's an acronym in finance called FANG. Who's heard of FANG before? F-A-N-G. There's a few people. It's an acronym for the four largest consumer brands in the technology space. Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. I think that's right. Those four companies have won on a massive scale. And the reason they've won is because of the predictive. So let's dig in a little bit to one of those. Netflix, and let's look at a case study. How did Netflix win when they weren't the incumbent? Some of you in the room actually don't know that other company up there. It's kind of crazy. But back in like the 80s and 90s, if you guys remember when we were in like high school or junior high, or whatever, we'd like run down to Blockbuster, spend 45 minutes trying to find a movie that was only an hour and a half long, right? But by the mid-90s, Netflix had already begun to disrupt them. But what's most interesting, by 2006, Netflix had already transitioned to their streaming business. And then 2007, 1 year after, Netflix put a bounty up. if you guys remember. They put a competition of, they wanted organizations and individuals to go create an algorithm using the Netflix data. They made the data open source. And they said, whoever can use this data and provide a better matching algorithm than they can internally, they'll award $1 million to. That's a year into the streaming service. That's how important predictive and data was to Netflix. You want to know why Netflix won? Because of data and science. Data and science. By the way, when we talk about AI and machine learning and predictive, it's all the same thing. They're different brands. They're different marketing words for the exact same stuff. And it's where you're using machine learning algorithms, math, with data and an application. So how do you win like those companies? That's why you're here. How do you win and how do you become an absolute industry killer? And the way to do it is the same way they did it. You have to use artificial intelligence. And artificial intelligence takes three elements. Number one, it's the math. Number two, it's the data. And number three, it's the application. And there's a lot of pretenders out there. Be wary, where they start with one of these elements. And it requires all three of these elements. I love that we're hearing about predictive from every large enterprise in the world. It's total validation that its time has come. But the reason it's come is because of the combination, the capability to do these three things. So let's get into each of these three. Number one, the math. It's actually less than math. A little bit of a misperception. People get enamored with the algorithm or the math or the regression or the statistics. It's not the math. The math has been around for over 65 years. It's been around for a long, long time. Arthur Samuel in 58 or 59, that's 1959, technically 65 years ago, was already using artificial intelligence to automate checkers games. By 1959, Bell Labs was using neural nets, which, by the way, are similar algorithms to what we're using today in many cases. They were using neural nets to filter out jitter and echo out of live phone conversations. Think about that. If a company said they were doing that today, would you not be like, wow, they're bleeding edge? That's 65 years ago. So it's not the math. The algorithms have been around. Now, there's some new stuff. You've got deep nets, neural net, or deep nets, random forest algorithm. There's some interesting stuff. And there's evolution of the core math. But the math has been around since the late 1940s, early 1950s. So if it's not the math, by the way, I should say math is table stakes. So, you have to have the math. But you can download Apache Spark. All of the math is basically in an open source project. Throw it on top of a Hadoop cluster, and there you go. That's the mistake. That's not what you need. You next have to have data. And it's not just data. We know that better data results in dramatically better predictive results. Better data makes all the difference. And what better data means is a combination of two things. Number one, you have to have a massive quantity of data. And number two, the quality has to be very, very unique. So first, let's talk about quantity. Amazon, the A in the FANG. Another one of the massive winners, right? I mean, this big companies, these are not small companies. In 2005, Amazon was doing 84 million, they were doing 84 million new customers every month. Every month there were new customers coming to their website and making purchases. That's not transactions, there were hundreds of millions of transactions. That's a crazy amount of data. So the problem is, most of us in this room don't have 84 million customers buying every month. Most of us don't, because the B2B space doesn't have that kind of volume. It's a B2C anomaly, which is why B2B has been a little bit of a laggard in the AI space. So let's talk about how to solve this problem. The way to solve this problem in the enterprise space is we have to actually work together. Many of you are customers in the room. The premise of Neuralytics, which is our machine learning engine, it's a massive co-op among all of us. And we're a customer of our own stuff also at Inside Sales. It's a massive co-op. All of us are participating and sharing anonymously this kind of data to have consumer-like data to be able to predict. In the database, we have over 25 million companies that we've analyzed their purchasing patterns. We have over 100 million profiles. These aren't people, these are types of people, categories of people, which probably represent somewhere in the range of about 500 million actual people. And then we have over 100 billion sales interactions with those 100 million plus people. Now, a sales interaction is anytime a sales rep engages with a lead prospect or customer. It could be a purchase, it could be a conversation, it could be an email, and that kind of thing. then what we're looking at is the context around those interactions. We know things like if it's raining today in San Francisco, but it's sunny in LA, you should be selling in San Francisco because engagement rates are higher, unless the Phoenix Suns the Lakers just won a game. And there's a 72-hour euphoric effect associated with that success. Unless there's traffic in LA, then you may want to wait till the evening. Unless gas prices are high, then you may want to actually sell them to companies that are in the suburbs of LA versus the downtown of LA. And so what we're looking at is a massive correlation engine that's helping us understand data, not unlike what Netflix does, not unlike what Amazon does, or Google, or Facebook. The only way to overcome the limitation of data availability in the enterprise space is to work together. The second problem in data, in data, is you have to have a quality of data. There's four ways you can actually get data. The first one is mandatory self-declared data. This is the government. Whenever they do a census, or whenever they do, you pay your taxes, or you get your driver's license, or any of that kind of data, levels and aspects of that data become available online, and companies can buy that data. The problem with that data is, number one, it's not timely. You don't pay your taxes every 20 minutes or every 3 days, thankfully. You have to, you pay it every year. Now, in some businesses, it's every quarter, but it's not that frequent. Similarly, the census is every 10 years. It's not every 10 minutes. And so the frequency of that data is actually very low. Similarly, as we volunteer data to the government, do we want them to know everything about us? Some of us more than others, I'll be honest with you, right? We're not incentivized to provide a huge amount of data to the government. Instinctually, we want to actually give as little as we can to be able to get away with it, which means the accuracy is nominal also. So it actually brings us to the next level. It's brute force data. These are where you have overseas call centers that are just slamming phones. They're calling every company. They're calling individuals trying to get information. And by the way, this is better because you're observing data versus having people volunteer the data. If it's observed, it's really hard to lie. You can still do it, but it's very hard. The problem with this kind of data is that it still can't be timely. You can't call 7 billion people every 20 minutes because people change every 20 minutes or every day or every hour. And so you have a bit of a problem with timeliness. The next one, which is truly innovative, is social media, where it's voluntary, self-declared data. Why did Microsoft spend so much on LinkedIn? That's an amazing set of data. It's absolutely unique. Companies like Facebook, we're volunteering that information on a real-time basis, right? When we tweet everything we do throughout the day, throughout the night, we're volunteering that information. The only problem is, does it actually represent our life, or is it maybe a curated version of our life? Like, let's be honest. We all don't spend every day of the year on a beach with glasses making, duck lips, right? Like, that's not a real thing. Yet, on Facebook, if you look at it, that's what we do all day, every day. It's not real. So again, social media has amazing timeliness, but its accuracy is not fantastic. The last one is what the consumer companies have figured out. It's called passive crowdsourcing, where they observe people behave. Nest observes when we wake up, where we go, when we're in the shower, when we get out of the shower, when we come home from work. And we don't know it. It's just happening. And then it alters our behavior. That's what we're doing. And that's how you have to be successful. You have to passively observe what's happening and then aggregate this data. So the question is, how do you then apply that last piece, where you apply AI in your workflow, in your sales process? Think about this in Nest. If you woke up and Nest texted you and said, hey, you better turn your thermostat up, you might do it, but you might not. I'll tell you a funny story. This is a true story. Last week, I'm going to bed, my wife's in bed, we're watching a show, and she says, Dave, it's really cold. Go turn the thermostat up. It was cold, it was like 64 degrees, the temperature in Utah went way down, and I said, no, you go turn it up. I'm cold, and she looked and she said, no. And we resolved to just pull a blanket up, because neither of us wanted to get out of bed, it was too cold. Even when we know the right thing to do, we don't do it. So the challenge with most AI, a lot of AI, is AI can often be non-consumable. And so we'll talk, it has to be blended perfectly in the workflow of how people do what they do. The music has to automatically stream. It doesn't have to, I can't be forced to go make a selection. I can't be forced to change my route. I have to just say, hey, here's a better route on your way to work. So the challenge with all of this is, even if you know what to do, for example, in sales, you know there are buyers and you know there are non-buyers. And there's, by the way, lots of lead scoring algorithms. It's all over the place, right? Again, throw Apache on Apache Spark on a Hadoop cluster, throw some data in it, and you probably can pull off some simple lead score. The challenge with that is when you do it and you just give a score to a rep, they're going to pretty much peanut butter their effort where they did before because of three things. One, they don't trust the algorithm. Two, they know better. And three, they're lazy. And we got all three of those, right? So the challenge, what ends up is no lift AI. And that's the problem right now. AI has become a really trendy thing and everybody's talking about it, but you got to be careful to not go down the trap of no lift AI. Excuse me. So the trick is you have to be able to blend that AI in your standard workflow. Thanks, Mike. And to do this, we internally at Inside Sales have mapped 3,000 different sales processes. Like the key is you have to be deep domain experts. Netflix knows more about entertainment and about our watching patterns and how we like to watch than anybody else on the planet. Nest knows more about the way people walk around their house, when they get there, when they leave, more than anybody on the planet. We know more about how people sell, the different sales processes, than anybody on the planet. And what we found, there's an interesting thing actually, I'll go back to this. About a year and a half ago, we love data, as you would imagine. We were doing an analysis on our data and looking at the different sales processes, and we found that there was a fundamental shift in the way sellers sell. Something changed, like very dramatically. Something changed, and it wasn't the same. So a lot of the processes that we had mapped were no longer valid. And as we dug into it, what we found was the seller had changed. And it's kind of obvious. That was my next slide. It's kind of obvious in hindsight, because we all know millennials now represent the majority of the selling workforce worldwide. That's an amazing fact. Millennials represent, they are the predominant seller in the market. And what we found is they work very differently than Gen Xers and baby boomers. They do not work the same way. We found three key differences. Number one, they work very orthogonally. They don't work linearly. They don't go through a set of things and they don't check things off a list. They go all over the place. Number two, they don't like to stay in any one system. They like to explore everything. One of the things we found in some research is if you sit down next to a millennial when you watch them work, they'll have anywhere from 10 to 50 tabs open at any given time. It's crazy, because I'm not a millennial. It's crazy. 10 to 50 tabs at any given time. And lastly, they like to work autonomously. They don't like to be told what to do. They like to take whatever is unique to them, their creativity, and then blend it in their selling environment. So if you want to empower them, you have to understand that workflow. And what we've done is we went and mapped this workflow. It actually begged the question for us, see if we can get there, to do a bunch of research. As soon as we saw this transition, we decided to go find out what's really happening in the market. I sent all of my product team on the road. We have over 500,000 miles flown. We did over 1,000 hours of research, frankly, in many cases with you. We talked to your reps. We watched your reps for hours and hours. We talked to your leaders. We watched how they do what they do. And what we found was something fundamentally different. We also mapped 10 distinct sales roles. People are selling in different kind of roles and responsibilities. And with this information, we've created a new product. And that's what many of you are here to come and see, a new product that actually accommodates this new way of selling. To share that, I want to invite Jared Halleck. He runs Product at Inside Sales up on stage. He's going to show you this new product.
All right, thanks, Dave. Now, I am thrilled to be here to introduce everyone to a next-generation product that represents a lot of hard work, not just from the teams at Inside Sales, but also represents thousands of hours of contribution from you, our customers, because we were on a quest to try to understand how to deliver tools for this next generation of sales rep or salesperson while leveraging this modern-day superpower called artificial intelligence. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to something that we call playbooks.
Ah!
right, there you have it. So clearly we're really excited to show you this new product called Playbooks. And it kind of takes everything that Dave's talked about in terms of this next generation of sales technology, leveraging AI to help your organizations sell more. So let's get right after it. First, I want to introduce you to Danielle. So Danielle is an archetype of an inside sales account executive. And her main goal is to close new business. But in the midst of all of that, she's got to figure out how she can maintain a healthy pipeline and build new pipeline opportunity to close later on in the month or in the quarter. And so the hardest part of her job is to build that pipeline. And now I want to talk a little bit about how Danielle is this millennial salesperson that Dave talked about earlier, right? Where she wants to work, where she wants to work, and where she wants to work, how she normally works. And she wants something to support her workflow and not necessarily direct her workflow.
Now, one thing that's interesting, by the way, is we found that as millennials have entered the workforce, the Gen Xers, and in many cases the baby boomers, are now mimicking the sales pattern of these millennials. So this thing doesn't apply only to the millennials, it actually applies to the entire workforce.
Yeah, that's right. So let's actually switch over to my demo computer here at the podium, and I'm going to take you through a day in the life that Danielle would normally experience. Now, it's the beginning of the month, and Danielle knows that she needs to build new pipeline opportunity. And the way that she would normally do that is she would go to Salesforce, and she'd look for new accounts that have been created for her. But then what she would do is she would spend anywhere from 20 to 50 minutes researching these companies and figuring out her own sort of human-powered algorithm for how she's going to prioritize and approach these companies. But we saved Danielle that time by using the power of Neuralytics and all that data that's been crowdsourced and aggregated from every customer across inside sales, this anonymous data, to give very accurate predictions about which companies are most likely to qualify and close. So what Danielle does is she clicks on this very first person at the top of the list. It's company, it's LogMeIn. Many of you guys know LogMeIn.
And one thing to note is whenever you see that light blue, the Tron blue, that suggests that Neuralytics is doing something. This is using that big data set that's analyzing all of the data to help your sales reps know when, who, and how to sell.
So as you'd expect, LogMeIn loads in Salesforce, and the first time that Danielle's gonna use Playbooks in her interface is right now. So she clicks on that square in the upper right-hand corner, and here's what's happening here. We're actually extending Danielle's browser experience because Danielle knows that a lot of her work takes place in the CRM, but a lot of her work takes place outside of the CRM, which we'll show you here in just a second. And so what Danielle sees here, she sees reasons, sort of some rationale for why this company is scored as high as it is. And then she also sees the people from her CRM that are already in there associated with LogMeIn, and she sees a prediction about whether or not these people are influential in the buying process. And that's represented by this fan chart around the photos here. The other thing that you see here is that there are recommended plays in these blue boxes here. And so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to click on Assign All and talk a little bit more about what a play is. So actually, I'm going to go back here. I'm going to click on Amy, and Amy's going to get enrolled in a VP level play. So let me just go find that real quickly here.
And as he does that, we use a sports metaphor, where you're going to have different playbooks, and there's plays within that playbook. Each of these plays represent different strategies, defined, structured strategies, and how you want to engage with leads, prospects, or customers from different situations.
So in this example, it's loaded up Amy. You see that Amy's record is also loaded in Salesforce. So any information in Salesforce that's relevant before reaching out to Amy is at Danielle's fingertips. And Danielle knows that in order to be successful, what she would normally do is go do a bunch of research. Dave talked about, you know, anywhere from a dozen to sometimes several dozen tabs open across Amy's monitor, because she's out researching anything she can find about LogMeIn or about Amy, the prospect here. So when she clicks on Personalized Insights, Danielle sees information about LogMeIn. We have basic firmographic information that's super helpful for Danielle to understand who she's selling to. What we found, our reps told us, is that they really love knowing if there are any peers or competitors to the company that they're trying to sell to that are already current customers. Or are there any customers that are in the local area? So in this case, it's Boston. So EMC, who's a current customer of Danielle's, is nearby.
So again, I'm going to interrupt for a second. This is a really exciting feature. This is completely new to our technology. And this, we found, is the biggest time waster of all of your reps. Your reps spend so much time researching the web, finding information, just basic information, so when they call the customer or they call the prospect, they have context. They don't sound unintelligent. They don't sound silly that they don't actually know who they're talking about. Keep going.
Yeah, so we see here information about the company. We also bring to Danielle social insights about Amy, who she's trying to get a hold of. And it looks like there's some really interesting things we can learn about Amy. So if I zoom in here, it looks like Amy follows, she's really into sales leadership. And she follows a lot of the same people that Danielle follows, which is going to be really helpful when she gets Amy on the phone. So she's about to reach out to Amy. And before she does, she remembers that Inside Sales Playbooks helps her understand when's the best time to reach out to Amy. And she knows that Inside Sales is able to do that because what Inside Sales does is we map across all of our customers, you know, these anonymous profiles, people that look like Amy, and what time of day are they most likely to engage in a phone conversation. So she hovers over this and sees that she is, in fact, in kind of that sweet spot of time to reach out to Amy. So what she'll do is she'll then call Amy, and we're making the phone call like many of you guys use who are current customers, and know that we facilitate that phone call. We do that using a local presence to display a local number. You can leave pre-recorded voicemails, all the stuff you know and love about Inside Sales. And in this scenario, Danielle actually does get a hold of Amy, but Amy doesn't have a lot of time to talk. So Danielle dispositions this as a correct contact, but that's really good for Danielle. She's feeling really optimistic about being able to sell to log me in. She has Amy's attention, and Amy's given her permission to give her a call back and also send an email with some additional information. And we know, Danielle knows that, great, she's going to be able to fulfill on that because, in fact, an email and a phone call are the next steps in this strategy to qualify Amy into her pipeline. So at this point, what Danielle does is she moves on to Eric. Now, Eric also works at LogMeIn, and Danielle also knows that in order to have a successful sale with LogMeIn, she's gonna have to enroll a bunch of different people at LogMeIn who are the stakeholders in the selling process there. And Eric is a leader of sales operations at LogMeIn. And so, now what I could do, what Danielle could do is she could click on personalize with insights, but Danielle has something actually more powerful. She has the age-old name drop. So she can go in, because she's already talked to Amy, highlight that subject line before sending out that email, which has been pre-templated for Danielle, she can say, hey, spoke with Amy, right? And so now Eric knows that Danielle has actually made contact and potentially wants to talk to Danielle because she's already talking to Amy.
So one thing to note, this is fundamentally different than the way the technology used to function. Rather than focusing on lists and working through larger buckets of people, this is a fundamental change around account-based selling. So rather than just trying to go through a list, what you want to do is engage with one account and surround that account and make contacts all the way up and down the organization. And we found this is a change that millennials are driving. And it's millennials love relationships. They like to go deep. They don't want to just move fast and not have depth in that engagement. So playbooks facilitates this new way of engaging with people.
Great. And so at this point, Danielle can send this email now. But similar to the way we helped her understand the best time to call, Danielle is able to click on Neural Send, which will help her understand when's the best time to send this email. Now, similar to what Dave said earlier about getting a text message and having the responsibility to go change your thermostat yourself, no one's going to schedule that and make a sticky note to send that email later. So we go ahead and we pre-schedule that for Danielle. So when you click on that, that goes gray, moves you on to the next step, and lets you know that that email has been scheduled to be sent at the right time based off of that person's profile. So at this point, what Danielle would do is she'd feel pretty confident about her efforts against LogMeIn, and she'd either go back to the CRM and find more accounts that are that have been scored high. But one thing we observed in our research is not all sales reps feel like they get enough leads to be successful in building their pipeline. I'm not saying anyone here has that problem, but we observed this. So, but the other thing is that a sales rep's quota doesn't go down just because there's not enough qualified records in the CRM to work. So what does Danielle do? She takes things into her own hands. And because she sells sales acceleration technology, and she's found that she's been typically successful with technology companies, she has she's decided that she likes to go to a site like Crunchbase, right? And so Crunchbase is a great place to learn about software companies or technology companies. And so as she's looking through Crunchbase, she sees these green flags, which are an indication that Playbooks thinks that companies like those companies that are flagged are more likely to qualify and ultimately buy something from Danielle. So great, she's gonna click on this company called Nutanix. Now, because I'm on Crunchbase, it's a fantastic place to learn more about technology companies. Oh, cool, they just went public last week. That's killer context for Danielle. She can now maybe strike a conversation about congratulating them on their successful IPO. She also knows that they probably have budget, and they also probably have the scrutiny of public markets that are gonna be driving them to deliver on their sales number, and her technology helps companies like that deliver and increase sales.
So there's an interesting point here. This is not in the context of the CRM. And what we're finding is reps like to go all over the web to be able to prospect and to be able to learn about their customers. And so this is not an atypical example. They go to, Crunchbase. They go all over the place. They could find prospects on Fortune as they're reading articles. They could do it on Forbes. They could do it on, virtually any website. And every sales rep has their own little technique.
Right. And one of the things we do, because we're extending the browser experience, we can give Amy some useful information here and some useful tools. Number one is hey, these people scored really high. And number two is let's go ahead and save that over to Playbooks. And again, we pulled over that company information because now we want to start targeting Nutanix as a prospect to sell to. But Amy doesn't yet know about anybody who works at Nutanix. And typically what Amy would do is she would scour the web to find people that work at Nutanix. She might mine her own social network or go to other places where she could find information about who works at Nutanix. Well, we make that simple for Danielle. So she clicks on Find More People. And what we're doing is based off of Danielle's company already having a relationship with a data vendor like ZoomInfo, we pull information from that data vendor, and then we layer on our artificial intelligence, which predictively suggests which people are most likely to have power and influence with respect to buying something at that company. So in this example, we've pulled down Craig and Kenton. Now Craig is a senior vice president of sales, check. And we also have Kenton, who's a sales operations manager, check. We typically need those two roles as a part of the buying process. And then what Danielle would do is she would add them to Playbooks and go ahead and start engaging with them through those prescriptive plays that we showed you earlier. Now, one of the things that happens at this moment in time is Danielle gets a notification that one of the emails that she's previously sent through Playbooks has been opened. And so it not only notifies her that email has been opened, it also lets her know that there's a suggestion to adjust the play so that she's not just following the existing play, but adapting that play based off of the behavior that one of her prospects has exhibited. So we're gonna go ahead and accept that change. And then the final thing that Amy's concerned about is whether or not her activity and her performance is measuring up to that of her peers. And so many of you guys know that we deliver a gamification technology called Power Standings, and we're seamlessly intertwining that into this Playbooks experience here. So that's Playbooks. It's a tool that helps people who sell both in and out of the CRM have a very intuitive and very simple and easy to use tool that supports their current workflow by weaving in artificial intelligence at nearly every stage of their workflow. So I actually wanna kind of switch back over to the slides, so if I can have those slides switch back. I wanna help you guys understand where Playbooks fits within the overall sales process with respect to the offerings from inside sales. So if I can have you switch back to the slides here. You're gonna see that Playbooks helps you build your pipeline, and it does that through artificial intelligence technology that helps prescribe who you should be selling to, how you should sell to them, and when you should engage with them. And then once those pipeline opportunities are built, we have a product called HD Forecast, which we don't have time to show you all today in this session, but HD Forecast uses that same artificial intelligence technology to predict which of those opportunities are gonna close and what actions need to be taken in order to ensure that they're gonna close in the right period so that you can hit your number. So, in terms of availability, we're excited to announce that the Communicate version of Playbooks is available now, and we're gonna be quickly rolling out both the Elevate and Accelerate versions. The HD Forecast is available today.